Chapter 141. In the checkered area of human experience, the seasons are all mingled as in the golden age. Fruit and blossom hang together. In the same moment the sickle is reaping, and the seed is sprinkled. One tends the green cluster and another treads the winepress. Nay, in each of our lives harvest and springtime are continually one, until himself gathers us, and sows us anew in his invisible fields. Among the blessings of love there is hardly one more exquisite than the sense, that in uniting the beloved life to ours we can watch over its happiness, bring comfort where hardship was, and over memories of privation and suffering open the sweetest fountains of joy. Deronda's love for Mira was strongly imbued with that blessed protectiveness. Even with infant and fetus he had begun to tread among thorns, and the first time he had beheld her face it had seemed to him the girlish image of despair. But now she was glowing like a dark-tipped, yet delicate ivory-tinted flower in the warm sunlight of content, thinking of any possible grief as part of that life with Deronda, which she could call by no other name than good. And he watched the sober gladness which gave new beauty to her movements, and her habitual attitudes of repose, with a delight which made him say to himself that it was enough of personal joy for him to save her from pain. She knew nothing of Hans's struggle, or of Gwendolyn's pang, for after the assurance that Deronda's hidden love had been for her, she easily explained Gwendolyn's eager solicitude about him as part of a grateful dependence on his goodness, such as she herself had known. And all Deronda's words about Mrs. Grandcourt confirmed that view of their relation, though he never touched on it except in the most distant manner. Mira was ready to believe that he had been a rescuing angel to many besides herself. The only wonder was that she among them all was to have the bliss of being continually by his side. So, when the bridal veil was around Mira it hid, no doubtful tremors, only a thrill of awe at the acceptance of a great gift which required great uses. And the velvet canopy never covered a more goodly bride and bridegroom, to whom their people might more wisely wish offspring. More truthful lips never touched the sacrament marriage wine. The marriage blessing never gathered stronger promise of fulfillment than in the integrity of their mutual pledge. Naturally, they were married according to the Jewish rite. And since no religion seems yet to have demanded that, when we make a feast we should invite only the highest rank of our acquaintances, few, it is to be hoped, will be offended to learn that among the guests at Deronda's little wedding feast was the entire Cohen family, with the one exception of the baby who carried on her teething intelligently at home. How could Mordecai have borne that those friends of his adversity should have been shut out from rejoicing in common with him? Mrs. Merrick so fully understood this that she had quite reconciled herself to meeting the Jewish pawnbroker, and was there with her three daughters, all of them enjoying the consciousness that Mira's marriage to Deronda crowned a romance which would always make a sweet memory to them. For which of them, mother or girls, had not had a generous part in it, giving their best in feeling and in act to her who needed? If Hans could have been there, it would have been better. But Mab had already observed that men must suffer for being so inconvenient. Suppose she, Kate, and Amy had all fallen in love with Mr. Deronda, but being women they were not so ridiculous. The Merricks were rewarded for conquering their prejudices by hearing a speech from Mr. Cohen, which had the rare quality among speeches of not being quite after the usual pattern. Jacob ate beyond his ears, and contributed several small whinnying laughs as a free accompaniment of his father's speech, not irreverently, but from a lively sense that his family was distinguishing itself, while Adelaide Rebecca, in a new Sabbath frock, maintained throughout a grave air of responsibility. Mordecai's brilliant eyes, sunken in their large sockets, dwelt on the scene with the cherishing benignancy of a spirit already lifted into an aloofness which nullified only selfish requirements and left sympathy alive. But continually, after his gaze had been traveling round on the others, it returned to dwell on Deronda with a fresh gleam of trusting affection. The wedding feast was humble, but Mira was not without splendid wedding gifts. As soon as the betrothal had been known, there were friends who had entertained graceful devices. Sir Hugo and Lady Malinger had taken trouble to provide a complete equipment for Eastern travel, as well as a precious locket containing an inscription, "To the bride of our dear Daniel Deronda all blessings." H and 50. M. The Klezmer sent a perfect watch, also with a pretty inscription. But something more precious than gold and gems came to Deronda from the neighborhood of Diplo on the morning of his marriage. It was a letter containing these words. "Do not think of me sorrowfully on your wedding day. I have remembered your words, that I may live to be one of the best of women, who make others glad, that they were born. I do not yet see how that can be, but you know better than one. If it ever comes true, it will be because you helped me. I only thought of myself, and I made you grieve. It hurts me now, to think of your grief. You must not grieve any more for me. It is better it shall be better with me, because I have known you. Gwendolyn Grandcourt." The preparations for the departure of all three to the east began at once, for Deronda could not deny Ezra's wish that they should set out on the voyage forthwith, so that he might go with them, instead of detaining them to watch over him. He had no belief that Ezra's life would last through the voyage, for there were symptoms which seemed to show that the last stage of his malady had set in. But Ezra himself had said, "Never mind where I die, so that I am with you." He did not set out with them. One morning early he said to Deronda, "Do not quit me today. I shall die before it is ended." He chose to be dressed, and sit up in his easy chair as usual, Deronda and Mir on each side of him, and for some hours he was unusually silent, not even making the effort to speak, but looking at them occasionally with eyes full of some restful meaning, as if to assure them that, while this remnant of breathing time was difficult, he felt an ocean of peace beneath him. It was not till late in the afternoon, when the light was falling, that he took a hand of each in his and said, looking at Deronda, "Death is coming to me as the divine kiss which is both parting and reunion, which takes me from your bodily eyes, and gives me full presence in your soul. Where thou goest, Daniel, I shall go. Is it not begun? Have I not breathed my soul into you? We shall live together." He paused, and Deronda waited, thinking that there might be another word for him. But slowly and with effort Ezra, pressing on their hands, raised himself and uttered in Hebrew the confession of the divine unity, which long for generations has been on the lips of the dying Israelite. He sank back gently into his chair, and did not speak again. But it was some hours before he had ceased to breathe, with Mira's and Deronda's arms around him. "Oathing is here for tears, nothing to wail or knock the breast, no weakness, no contempt, dispraise or blame, nothing but well and fair, and what may quiet us in a death so noble." End of the Project Gutenberg ebook of Daniel Deronda, by George Eliot. End of the Project Gutenberg ebook Daniel Deronda. This file should be named 7DRDA10. TTXT or 7DRDA10. Zip corrected editions of our ebooks get a new number, 7DRDA11. TTXT versions based on separate sources get new letter, 7DRDA10ATTXT, produced by Ann Sowlard, Tiffany Vergen and the online distributed proofreading team. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as public domain in the U.S., unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we usually do not keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. We are now trying to release all our ebooks 1 year in advance of the official release dates, leaving time for better editing. Please be encouraged to tell us about any error or corrections, even years after the official publication date. Please note neither this listing nor its contents are final till midnight of the last day of the month of any such announcement. The official release date of all Project Gutenberg ebooks is at midnight, Central Time, of the last day of the stated month. A preliminary version may often be posted for suggestion, comment and editing by those who wish to do so. Most people start at our websites at http Gutenberg. Annet or HTTP. Promo. Annet page. These websites include award-winning information about Project Gutenberg, including how to donate, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter free. Dot, those of you who want to download any ebook before announcement can get to them as follows, and just download by date. This is also a good way to get them instantly upon announcement, as the indexes our catalogers produce obviously take a while after an announcement goes out in the Project Gutenberg newsletter. HTTP www.iabiblio.org Gutenberg ETEXT03 or FTP FTP iabiblio.org Pubdocs Books Gutenberg ETEXT03 or ETEXT02010099998979594939292901 or 90, just search by the first five letters of the file name you want, as it appears in our newsletters. Information about Project Gutenberg, one page. We produce about $2 million for each hour we work. The time it takes us, a rather conservative estimate, is 50 hours to get any ebook selected, entered, proofread, edited, copyright searched and analyzed, the copyright letters written, etc. Our projected audience is 100 million readers. If the value per text is nominally estimated at $1, then we produce $2 million per hour in 2002 as we release over 100 new text files per month. 1240 more ebooks in 2001 for a total of 4,000 plus we are already on our way to trying for 2,000 more ebooks in 2002. If they reach just 1-2% of the world's population then the total will reach over half a trillion ebooks given away by year's end. The goal of Project Gutenberg is to give away 1 trillion ebooks. This is 10,000 titles each to 100 million readers, which is only about 4% of the present number of computer users. Here is the briefest record of our progress. Means estimated, : ebooks year month, 1971 July 10 1991 January 100 1994 January 1000 1997 August 1500 1998 October 2000 1999 December 2500 2000 December 3000 2001 November 4000 2001 October November 6000 2002 December 9000 2000 3 November 10,000 2004 January, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation has been created to secure a future for Project Gutenberg into the next millennium. We need your donations more than ever. As of February 2002, contributions are being solicited from people and organizations in Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Connecticut, Delaware, District of Columbia, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, West Virginia, Wisconsin, and Wyoming. We have filed in all 50 states now, but these are the only ones that have responded. As the requirements for other states are met, additions to this list will be made, and fundraising will begin in the additional states. Please feel free to ask to check the status of your state. In answer to various questions we have received on this, we are constantly working on finishing the paperwork to legally request donations in all 50 states. If your state is not listed, and you would like to know if we have added it since the list you have, just ask. While we cannot solicit donations from people in states where we are not yet registered, we know of no prohibition against accepting donations from donors in these states who approach us with an offer to donate. International donations are accepted, But we don't know anything about how to make them tax deductible, or even if they can be made deductible, and don't have the staff to handle it, even if there are ways. Donations by check or money order may be sent to Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, PMB 113-1739 University Avenue, Oxford, MS 38655-4109. Contact us if you want to arrange for a wire transfer or payment method other than by check or money order. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation has been approved by the U.S. Internal Revenue Service as a 501(c)(3) organization with an employee identification number 64622154. Donations are tax deductible to the maximum extent permitted by law. As fundraising requirements for other states are met, additions to this list will be made, and fundraising will begin in the additional states. We need your donations more than ever. You can get up-to-date donation information online at http://www.ggutenberg.netdonation.html. If you can't reach Project Gutenberg, you can always email directly to Michael S. Hart, H-A-R-T at pobox.com greater than prof. Hart will answer or forward your message. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.